You are listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice.
Hello, everyone, and a very warm welcome to the second episode of our podcast series, Living in Criminal Justice Research, an initiative designed to make research more accessible, engaging, and relevant for practitioners and anyone interested in criminal justice. My name is Ana Esquerra Roqueta. I work as Policy and Liaison Officer at the Confederation of European Probation, and I'm also Associate Teacher at the University of Barcelona. In our last episode, we had an engaging conversation with our colleague Kyle. Today, we are changing seats a little. While Kyle takes on a different role, we are delighted to welcome our guest, Jeffrey Janjan. Jeffrey is Policy Advisor at Probation FIBOR in the Netherlands and PhD candidate at Leiden University. In this episode, we will explore Jeffrey's research, Warm Hearts in Cold Streets, Growing Roses Through Concrete. Based on his research and professional experience, Jeffrey discusses how probation practitioners can better understand the links between online and offline street life. He also shows how resilience, creativity, and potential can grow from challenging life experiences. And now I'm pleased to give the floor to my colleague, Kyle.
Thanks, Anna, and welcome, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, before we get into a discussion, you know, about the research itself, I just really wanted to know, you know, I think for listeners it'd be really beneficial, what first drew you to focus on street culture and, you know, the young people that, you know, you work with, and why does this topic matter so much to you personally as a probation professional in the Netherlands?
Okay, thank you for this invitation, and thank you for this interesting question. For me, it is important to understand that probation clients can be part of a so-called hybrid street world. How can I put it? It's a concept of criminologist Jeroen van der Broek, and he says it's a symbolic world with a mixed reality. And what I see in this world in my research, we also see creativity and identity craft development. But at the same time, this world can be pro-criminal and can encourage antisocial thinking. And this is also happens through the use of social media. Young people often maintain their street image online by showing violence, displaying weapons, and boasting about criminal involvement, but also share fight videos. And there is sometimes online, we see also drug dealing. Criminologists call it the hybridization of street crime. So it's very important for probation services to take a look at that online domain of our clients. And we should be aware that the online world can involve crimes, risks, and hybrid realities where the on and offline worlds are, what's the good word, intertwined with each other. Online conflicts, for example, can also lead to offline offenses. Because of their supervisory role, probation services are allowed to view public online sources. At the same time, international cooperation, I think, it's very important so we can learn from each other and possibly develop more consistent online approaches worldwide. So what I think, let's stay in touch with each other internationally. So thank you for this question, Cal.
No, brilliant. It sounds like what really sort of inspired you to embark on this research was drawn from sort of practical practice experience and an interest in sort of, you know, discovering more in the hybrid world that young people now find themselves in more increasingly at the moment. Do you want to tell a little bit more about your research specifically and give listeners a little bit more about what the research itself is, a brief summary?
Of course, my research shows that probation officers can sometimes feel uncertain about how to act in this online world, in this online domain, because they are not trained to include the online world in their work or to access online risks. As for me, it's very important to develop with colleagues a step-by-step plans, and clear practical guidelines can reduce this feeling of insecurity. Why? What can we do in this online world? There is also sometimes a lack of understanding or awareness, because some probation officers do not see the online world as real, but they look sometimes at it as a fictive world. But the online domain has nevertheless real consequences.
That's really interesting, especially, you know, of your research showing that, that sometimes practitioners don't see the online world as real. I think that's
This is wonderful, and actually, it makes me think about how probation officers think about risk. And I was thinking, is probation sometimes too focused on risk and not enough on resilience? On your perspective, what are your thoughts on this?
That's a complex but interesting question. Of course, it is important to think from the R&R model, for example. But let us not only focus on risk, and let us also look at what this group needs to live a good life. And for this, we can use the good lives model, for example. By focusing on helping people build a stable identity instead of a pro-criminal street identity, finding meaningful work or education, develop positive relationships and gain healthy ways to achieve a status and respect in society, I think.
I think that's really interesting. I think the theme of identity really comes through in your research, Jeffrey. And it makes me think, you know, how we can maybe bridge some of that theory into practice, you know. So, you know, I suppose my next sort of question or reflection is, you know, so if I'm a busy practitioner in whichever, you know, country listening to this, who recognizes the young people that you're describing and that you discuss, you know, what's the one thing I should do as a busy practitioner? You know, what's the one thing I should do differently tomorrow after hearing about your research and listening to this?
Yeah, this is an excellent question. I would have the same question. What's your recommendation for probation officers? What would be your recommendation? I'm sure that you might have a few, but yeah, what would you like to share?
When we look at the R&R model again, and the principle of specific responsivity, it shows that it's very important to take the individual unique elements of the client into account when delivering interventions. And in this way, the intervention fits better and becomes more effective. For example, we should consider also street socialization. Where does someone come from? Their cultural background, for example, and their social skills developed on the streets or not developed. How did someone grow up? Taking these specific factors into account and being curious about them and can increase, my opinion, the effectiveness of interventions. My colleague Jeroen van den Broek and I call it, in this context, street sensitivity. As probation officers, we must sensitive for street culture and the life around it.
And I was thinking as well when I was reading your research I was connecting it with each country criminal justice. No, there is a kind of focus in some countries more on judging young people and more wanting to put people in custody and a different perspective on the criminal justice chain, as we call it. And I was asking myself and wanting to ask you, what has your research taught you about the difference between a more punitive model on judging young people and, on the other hand, understanding young people's life in a more compassionate way?
Yeah, that's a very important concept, compassion. I think it's very important to help and support young people who struggle to find their place in society. And it really matters where you are born. I believe in that. It really matters where you are born and in what environment you grow up. And we must be curious about that. And I hope we can keep having compassion and not reject people as individuals, but focus on their criminal behavior. We must reject that, not the person. And we should not forget that if the street is an important environment for someone, it can be very difficult to leave it when it provides status, respect, excitement, and maybe sometimes even entertainment. And also, when we ask someone to build a pro-social identity in probation services, this can be very hard if a pro-criminal identity is their only source of status. And the question then becomes, what is left of someone when they leave that identity behind? It's very difficult. And in the literature, academic literature, this is described as the horrors of identity nakedness. What becomes of me when I'm going to change to a pro-social life? But at the same time, I see also probation clients with real, real multi-talents. Some are very good at sports, and others can speak very well at conferences and training sessions about their experience on the street, for example. And we should highlight these talents. It is important to remember that they are not only defined by crime. Sometimes they become involved in crime because they feel they have nothing to lose. I hope we can give them a sense of belonging and show them that there are real opportunities in society instead of the streets. We should invest in them and believe in them. And that's a very, very important word, believing in them, belief.
Yeah.
Sometimes I hear a lot of negative views also from probation officers that they say, no, these youngsters are not, they cannot be saved. But in some cases, it takes several periods of supervision or even detention before someone stops committing crime. However, if probation services do not believe in them anymore, who will order?
Yeah, I think that you said something crucial for me, linked to identity. When a probation officer believes in the person that has in front, it helps to build a new identity.
Yes.
So for me, this is something crucial, and I see that you also highlighted in your research, which I think that it can be something, or it can seem something basic, but it's not basic at all, because from intervention to intervention, as probation officers, we forget about it. And I think it's a basis. It's like a mantra. We need to repeat it to ourselves.
Just like that. And I believe in I believe in this message.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. I think, given that, I think what your discussions and research highlights is that, there is a risk really that probation officers, are potentially working with only half the picture, and actually, how well are we managing risk if we're only, dealing with the person that we see in front of us, and maybe not always recognizing the impact and influence that online identities have, you know, upon the whole self. And I think you describe, you know, that disconnect between how someone presents, you know, in reality in the office and how they present online in your research. And, you know, I wonder if you could speak a bit more to how, you know, how big a risk really is it that probation is working potentially with only half the picture.
I think that's a real big risk, and I think it's also a very good question. What I see in my research is that we forget the online domain in supervision, and it's also a relative a new domain to put in our risk assessment tools, and it's very important. And what also is very important is that we are transparent with our clients. I think that in a digitalized society, it's not a strange thing to ask about social media behaviors, to ask about online behaviors, use of apps, something like that. I think they will not find it strange, our clients, alongside urine tests, home visits, GPS ankle bracelets. We also sometimes look at social media behavior, especially when there is an online element in criminal behavior.
But Jeffrey, is there a risk there that I suppose what you're describing is potentially, you know, some of our people on probation may think or feel that is an increase, and I mean staff may also feel this as well, that's an increase in surveillance measures. You know, and you know, our current risk assessment tools maybe don't focus enough on exploration of online worlds and online you know, activity and behaviors. But I suppose there is then, I don't know, a risk around probation becoming more surveillance heavy, which taps into other sort of critical discourse. But I wondered what you thought about that, and how do we, I suppose, you know, how do we monitor somebody's online world and engage with them in a way that is, I suppose, digitally literate, but that is also ethically sound and proportionate and still builds trust rather than surveillance anxiety. You know, will we still get an accurate picture in working with somebody if they know that that their social media is being monitored by their probation officer?
I think we can. It's very important to do it. Although we have an what's the good word? Legal basis to do this, we must of course treat privacy domain with respect. It is not the intention to secretly monitor clients, but to make this a discussable part of probation practice, especially for the second time in a digital society where almost everyone is online every day. And I think transparency and honesty are key in this online monitoring context.
Yes, and I think that this brings a debate on the table, as we say here, whether social media is a public space, you know, anthropologically and sociologically talking. If we understand social media as a public space, then it can be much more easy to monitor and to, you know, as probation officers, to look at it and see behavior of our clients in there.
Yes. Yes.
I think that's really interesting because, I mean, again, I suppose my thoughts and reflections are going crazy right now, because I'd love to know whether probation practitioners really do see, as Anna's just described, you know, the online world as an additional public space. I don't know. I don't know whether that Is that something that you, you know, found or spoke about in your research, Jeffrey?
If we look at the GDPR framework, the probation services can only view the public online sources of social media of our clients. When the social media platforms are locked, we can take a look at it. So it's a very good question. They may check, when we look at probation officers, they may check what clients do online, how they present themselves, and whether this creates risks. And my research shows that young people often try to show online that they come from the streets. And in academic literature, this is called a performance of street identity online. And this can include showing violence, hinting at criminal involvement, and displaying expensive consumption. Very important information, if you ask me, for probation officers, and also known as conspicuous consumption. Look at me, I'm very rich, I've got a lot of money, and I earned it because I'm a criminal, something like that. They show it on social media, for example. What we also see is that some young people feel that others act too tough online, which can lead to challenges and invitations to fight offline. And so there is an, how can I call it, a hybrid reality where on and offline worlds are intertwined with each other. Luckily, in many cases, it stays at the level of online threats. However, internationally, there are also cases where these conflicts have led to serious injuries and even death. So that's a point where I think probation officers must look at this online world to be preventive and to act accurate.
I think it's really interesting that sort of blending, isn't it, of reality and sort of online spaces and online world and that coming together. So what, you know, what's something that you think then that probation staff maybe get wrong or misunderstand about street culture and the you know, the online world that people live in? Yeah, what's something that they often get wrong? Do you feel?
If we look at street culture, there is no causal link. Street culture is leading to violence or dangerous behavior. Street culture can also function as an creative melting pot or something like that. The street culture has a lot of beautiful sides, I think. But what we also see in the same street world is the hybridization of traditional street crime. And for example, fraud and drug trafficking increasingly and nowadays include online elements. And for probation services, this means that the online world of clients is becoming an increasingly important part of supervision and risk assessment, because probation officers often stay in contact with clients through, for example, WhatsApp, messaging apps, and they also see more of their online behavior, sometimes also unintentionally. They may, for example, come across profile pictures, status updates that show pro-criminal messages, the glorification of violence, for example, or images of firearms. And in academic literature, this is described as the mirror on their mind effect. In other words, online behavior can reflect underlying pro-criminal attitudes and emotions antisocial emotions that are not always visible in the face-to-face meetings with our clients. And overall, reoffending is becoming more visible online, as some clients even record criminal acts and share them on social media. This is called in academic literature performance crime or criminal selfies. And this gives probation officers more insight into offending behaviors, but it also requires careful interpretation. Online signals, possible violations, may lead to communication to the court and police, including the possibility of returning a client to a prison setting. So we must be very... I can't find the word, but
aware.
That's the right word. Aware.
Yeah.
Aware of this online domain and the risk that can involve with it.
I like the phrase you use there. Criminal selfies.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
I think that, you know, the all of what you discuss, Jeffrey, I think is really interesting from a UK setting and has definitely international relevance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Anna, from what Jeffrey's discussed so far, do you think, how much do you resonate with what he's discussed? Do you see this in your jurisdiction?
Yes, I see this in my jurisdiction a lot. I worked many years with juveniles in criminal justice setting, both closed and open regime, and also seeing nowadays how things go. I think that first, probation officers, we need training on these aspects. Yes. Because we know that it's happening, but we do not know what to do with it. You know, it's like we have all this information in our hands, but how to include this in assessments, how to include this in interventions, and we need training. We need to know what to do with all this. Mm-hmm. And I think that this can, as Kyle said, this resonates, or this might be happening the same in different European countries, at least. And
I think this also, I think that it highlights that, as well as training, but also maybe the need for probation organizations to revisit the definition of harm and maybe include recognition, or more formally include recognition of the harm of online spaces as well, mm-hmm. which I think also maybe taps into a much wider political debate around online spaces and the harms that can or can't be caused online. I think this discussion also makes me think about how these patterns cross borders through digital culture. Jeffrey, did you find anything surprising when you compared experiences across countries, or are we all, I suppose what I'm asking is this phenomenon that you're describing, from your research within in the Netherlands, is it essentially everywhere? Is it a phenomenon that's everywhere the same in every country?
Yeah, that's a very good good questions. I think there is a similar hybrid street world, but there are differences. For example, what surprised me over the years, and also when we look at, I hope it's a word, virality. So some trends are going viral. What I noticed, for example, and I think you know that, Cal, because you are from the UK, the rise of drill rap spread very quickly from Chicago to the UK and then to the Netherlands, along with a highly violent music style, music genre. Gang-related behaviors have also been copied What shocked me the most was the mocking of murder victims and the symbolic smoking of cremation ashes in a marijuana joint, in a blunt. And in my research, I call this digital grave desecration. There is sometimes a lot of risky and harmful copycat behavior. And I hope that internationally we can work together and share information about these risky and harmful trends. We need each other over borders. We must build on each other.
Yeah, indeed. I see a lot of trends here, but more linked with South America, because that was our ancient colony. And there are a lot of gangs coming from South America here in Spain, and they are copy and pasting this behavior. And I also wanted to ask, what about gender? Do you see any difference between men and women? Or maybe you will explore this in the future? Or I don't know. It's very interesting for me also, this perspective.
Yes. For now, in my research, I'm always I'm only aiming at young men. Mm-hmm. It's a hyper masculine world.
Wow,
but we see there are also women are involved and participating in this hybrid street world, but it's more a man world. So men are more in this world, in this field than women. But women has for example facilitating roles if we look at crime, for example.
Mm-hmm. Wow, thank you. Interesting.
That is interesting. I think there's certainly maybe scope for further discussion and research in that, Anna and Jeffrey. that is interesting. Jeffrey, I wanted to ask, and I think, you've been very open about your own connection to street culture throughout your article and in your research.
Yes.
I think you touched upon it earlier in the discussion around the need for, probation to, increase their understanding of street culture and maybe be more willing to view this as with a different lens of people that maybe identify with street culture and obviously the online worlds that then maybe leads into in terms of criminality. But I suppose, do you think then, I'm speaking from a UK setting where, for example, it is very difficult for people with lived experience or, to maybe, enter the service, etc. So do you think that probation maybe needs to be more comfortable as an organisation with practitioners bringing more of themselves into the workplace to, that maybe have more more insights and understanding based on their own experiences of the worlds that you describe?
It's a very interesting question. I think also a beautiful question. Our young clients are highly sensitive to the authenticity of a probation officer. They feel it. We are all human. Probation officers, clients, we're all the same. We all are all human. And it's very important to build a connection with the person you are supporting. And it can be very powerful when probation officers also share that they have faced challenges in life, struggled at times and did not have an easy path. Mm-hmm. Success does not come automatically for them either. I believe that this personal contact can create more trust and connection. In fact, I think some clients may even see probation officers as role models. We should not forget that probation officers have also hard had to work hard in life and have chosen this profession for a reason. It can feel like a calling. Within probation work, there are also, what's the concept? In probation work, there are also wounded healers. And that can be something very meaningful and also powerful, I think.
Jeffrey, I think that this last message is super powerful. It's really, really, really good. And I think that it's a message that can travel around the world because it's super powerful again.
I agree. And, you know, Jeffrey, just to bring the discussion to a close, I think that, you know, I want to say thank you, really. That was a very genuinely powerful discussion. And I think what really stands out from this conversation is the reminder, really, that young people that we work with living in complex hybrid worlds where, you know, identity, risk, creativity and survival all overlap. And I think you've done a really, you know, good job at really shining a light on these areas. And for us as practitioners, you know, it's not just about managing behavior. It's about understanding context, building trust, recognizing people's potential for growth, and even in spaces where it's not immediately obvious. And I liked the picture of your article, you know, that with the rose coming through the concrete.
Absolutely. It has a lot of links with poetics and very, very, very nice. We highly recommend it to everyone listening to this podcast that they can read it because it's very beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks, Jeffrey, you know, for sharing your work and starting what I feel, you know, it feels like, I think is a really important international conversation. And and hopefully this is just the beginning, really, of exploring how probation across borders can respond to this changing landscape together. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, colleagues. You were a wonderful audience.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kyle. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the INCJ podcast, Conversations about International Criminal Justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.